we believe that Bitcoin is the real currency. But without having a real economy around it, it's not actually a currency. It's just like payment tool, payment token, let's say. So with Ctrade, what we want to enable is an economy around Bitcoin.
We've teamed up with the Wormhole Foundation, stewards of the Wormhole Protocol, the leading interoperability platform powering cross-chain transfers for 200-plus multi-chain teams. Claim your unique Wormhole NFT just for 0x Research listeners today. Pair is an innovative pair trading exchange built on top of Simio. Users can trade trending narratives with one click from blue chip narratives such as long BTC, short ETH, right through the whiff versus bump. The hat stays on. Simio's intent-centric architecture enables deep liquidity, source off-chain and brought on-chain, and combined with Pair, has democratized access to complex trading strategies typically reserved for institutional traders. Before we get into today's episode, just a quick disclaimer. The views expressed on this podcast by either myself or any guests are their personal views and do not represent the views of any associated organization. Nothing in this episode should be construed or relied upon as financial, technical, tax, legal, or other advice. All right, let's jump into the episode. All right, guys, welcome back to another episode of 0x Research. We have a great episode lined up with Orkun, the co-founder over at Chainwig, which is the entity behind Citria. Today is Monday, March 25th. As a reminder, be sure to use code 0xresearch10 at app.blockworksresearch.com for 10% off your annual subscription. On to the interview with Orkun. Thank you so much for coming on.
Hi, guys. Hi. Thank you for having me today.
Yeah, before we dive into the specifics of Citria, let's start at a super high level. Let's define what an L2 is and what the current trust assumptions are with Bitcoin L2. So for starters, what makes an L2 an L2?
Great. So it's kind of tricky in Bitcoin ecosystem. The answer to your question, what makes an L2 an L2? So in regular things, we call L2, that is like, it is a system that allows you to unilaterally exit from the system. So let's say Ethereum rollups today, most of them, with having a full ZK proofs, no multisigs, there's like no, I think, one D-gate and like maybe Freel are like examples of that. So they're an L2, which allows you to trustlessly and unilaterally exit. So in Bitcoin, because of the script limitations, there are only like one solution that is actually an L2, Lightning. Because like it's a channel between two parties. If you are trusting yourself, then you can unilaterally exit. So in Bitcoin, there is this tricky thing. It is technically nothing is an L2 on Bitcoin. But as we broadly define L2 as a, like gaining some use case from the actual token and also it expands the security of the L1 to the L2. So by this definition, yeah, L2 on Bitcoin is usually defined by their like ability to do more with the BTC, let's say adding programmability, and the other is implementing some security inherited from the base layer. So in Bitcoin and like in general, the definitions are a little bit different, but I'm more in favor of the first one that is using the correct definition. If we are using that, there's no L2 on Bitcoin other than Lightning, but it's too speculative and technical. Yeah.
And I'm going to ask a lot of stupid questions this episode because I think a lot of us are pretty confused on a lot of the nomenclature. So how would you define like stacks, for example? Would that be more of a side chain? And if so, like what are the differences between a project trying to be a Bitcoin L2 versus a Bitcoin side chain?
Yeah. So side chains are like definitely not an L2. So they introduce additional risk of the additional consensus, plus the additional risk of the bridge mechanism itself. So in that sense, stacks is like kind of has it's an L1 with a multisig bridge in between. Today, with this multisig bridge, with the new upgrade, you can just stake tokens and like become the members. But eventually, it's the honest majority multisig with a totally different chain. Yes, it inherits some like reorg guarantees and such, but the sidechain miners and block producers can steal from you. And that's definitely not inside the L2 definition. But with like rollups and Lightning, the operator of the L2, the block producer of the L2 cannot steal from you. I think that's the most important thing for making this distinction between stacks and like other rollups and stuff.
And then there's this concept of sovereign rollups. So what is really the difference between a sovereign rollup and a regular rollup? Does it ultimately just come down to a vast majority of the TVL being the base asset and having that trustless bridge between the two?
I think maybe there are not that much difference. Like it is just like too technical and too neat. I think we were discussing with like this with Celestia team, and eventually maybe there is not much difference because rollup by definition is like an L2 that uses the underlying trace data availability and consensus guarantees. So sovereign rollup, regular rollup, it is just using the same thing, but regular rollup has a validating breach in the L1 so that you can breach the assets. But then we ask this question, what if like we can build and breach to the sovereign rollup, but the breach doesn't define the L2. It is just a breach that operates and it can reorg. So in that sense, I don't think there are like lot of difference. But in a traditional way, yeah, we know that sovereign rollups don't usually have a breach between the L1. If they become like build a breach, they either become a like rollup or lose some of their sovereignty. Maybe they need to add some delays and such. A sovereign rollup is usually known as a lack of ability to breach from the base layer.
You mentioned the bridge a few times, and you said, like the bridge doesn't define the rollup. And I think for most people, they would say the bridge gives a view into the rollup. And I think most are relatively familiar with bridges in terms of like Ethereum-based rollups. On Bitcoin's side, is a trustless, or I guess more accurately, like trust minimized bridge between Bitcoin and a layer two possible today? If not, what needs to change in order to make it possible?
Yeah, so today you can only trustless bridge. It is not even a bridge, it's Lightning that you can simply like onboard your BTC to the Lightning. But in rollups, as you cannot like compute the ZK proof permission list on the full network or like verify the fraud proofs on full network, it is not trustless. So we call this trust minimized. Let's say in Citrix setup, we have this BitVM where like I think the earliest team working on the BitVM today building the first application on it. So we have built a ZK verifier in BitVM. So as long as one of these N people, let's say 10 people or 100 people is honest, then the ZKP verifier is actually launched and like applied on chain. So it is back then it is on chain, but before that it is not on chain. It is simply like off chain checking with all the members. So we call this trust minimized. It is not trustless because if you are running a node, and you are still trusting the one of N of the committee. So it is trust minimized. But if you are simply like just running a node and everything is correct, then we call this trustless. So in order Bitcoin to have this trustless, let's say, bridge to the Citrix, then we need to enable a ZK verifier opcode on Bitcoin script so that and maybe like a recursive covenant to make the withdrawals so that it can actually verify the L2 on full node on the all of the full nodes so that we can have this trustless setup.
I guess following up that, this is going to be another silly question, but you mentioned that in a trustless setup, you would need that ZK verifier. And I would assume that you also need some entity or some node to sort of generate that ZK proof. Why would that be defined as trustless rather than trust minimized? Because I don't know if this is a hot take, but I don't really think anything in crypto is like truly trustless as long as you're like trusting one entity to like do something and then like at least being able to verify that proof, that ZK proof or whatever. So what, how would you make the distinction, I guess, between like trustless and trust minimized?
Yeah, to our eye, like trustless, it is only trustless if you have only like have need in the like L1 node. So if you have L1 node, if everything is safe, then it is trustless. So in the ZKP verification, if the prover is permissionless, it is only trustless then. So if prover is only like single centralized entity, which is like authorized by signatures and stuff, it is not trustless because yeah, you are trusting that entity to generate the proof. But in the long term, if you like eliminate all the other needs, prover decentralization and like permissionless provers are relatively easy compared to the other concepts. So making it permissionless and having everything ready on the base layer, I think makes it trustless because you as a person run a ZKP prover, generate the proof, send it to Bitcoin and make it verified on all of the full nodes. So this is what defines trustless to our eye.
So on Ethereum, you have smart contracts, which, typically for an L2, you have one contract on the base layer, and that's kind of like the canonical bridge contract. But with Bitcoin, obviously that's not possible, considering we don't have smart contracts on Bitcoin. So you mentioned BitVM, and I am a complete novice on BitVM. So if you could kind of explain BitVM and how that actually enables this process, that would be great.
Yeah. So Bitvue is simply like off-chain computer with an on-chain front proof protocol. So you simply build an off-chain program that runs between several parties, let's say one operator and verifiers and guardians, validators, whatever you say. So we run this program off-chain. The operators supply some input to all the others to run in their program. And if they encounter an issue during their execution of the program, they can go on-chain and send the fraud proofs challenging the operator. An operator responds, then the verifier challenges again. So at the end of several transactions, Bitcoin UTXO can know that whether the verifier win or the program win. So by using this setup, we are building the CK verifier between a single operator and multiple verifiers. And in the long term, what we are doing is make this process as trust-minimized as possible with multiple verifiers, so that if any of them are honest, they can simply challenge this operator's input, the ZK proof on chain, so they can guard the peg actually.
Okay, got it. And you also mentioned earlier something about covenants, and those are not super clear to me. And I was under the understanding that OP CAT was needed in order to enable covenants. So could you maybe explain what those are and also what OP CAT is and what it enables?
Okay. So in Bitcoin, there's this UTXO, and you can spend it only you know how to spend it. But Bitcoin doesn't enforce you to where to spend it. So by spending a UTXO, you are creating new UTXOs. But Bitcoin doesn't care about where they go. But if you have covenants, then Bitcoin also can restrict where these UTXOs they can actually go. So you can also program a single UTXO and say that, okay, I want this UTXO only be spent with these inputs by just making this rule, and I want this UTXO only go to this person's controlled UTXO set or such. This is the basic definition of covenant. It's not basic, but yeah.
Wormhole is the leading interoperability platform for multi-chain bridges and applications. With over 1 billion messages sent and 40 billion in value transferred, Wormhole leads the industry in cross-chain message volume and total value transferred. If you're a builder, Wormhole has an extensive suite of tools and infrastructure to securely build multi-chain applications. You can use Wormhole to power DeFi, NFTs, governance, and so much more. And Wormhole supports over 30 blockchains and 6 different runtimes. Claim your unique Wormhole NFT just for 0x Research listeners today. Fill out a form, prove that you've listened to today's episode to receive a Pearl app, and you'll get an email over the coming weeks to claim your limited edition NFT. Pair is an innovative pair trading exchange built on top of Simio. Users can trade trending narratives with one click from blue chip narratives such as long BTC, short ETH, right through the whiff versus bonk. The hat stays on. Simio's intent-centric architecture enables deep liquidity, source off-chain, and bought on-chain, and combined with Pair, has democratized access to complex trading strategies typically reserved for institutional traders.
I wanted to follow up on sort of like the BitVM side of things, right? I think for most people that are using Ethereum rollups, they're relatively familiar, at least with, say, for example, like optimistic rollups, right? When you want to bridge funds over to the L2, you go to, I don't know, like bridge.arbitrum.io or whatever the website is. You send your ETH, for example, to the smart contract. Full nodes on the rollup basically wait for like finalization on the L1. And then after like whatever checks they need to do, they mint a corresponding amount of wrapped ETH, for example, on the L2. And conversely, when someone wants to exit the L2, you send funds back to the bridge contract, and then you wait for the 7-day fraud-proof challenge period to occur, and then those funds are released on the L1. If you had to describe that same sequence of events, but for a Bitcoin L2, whether that's like a generic one or one such as like Citra, how would you like walk us through that process?
I think I cannot just describe the other Bitcoin L2s because like it is too broad, and almost all of them are just using multisigs, like sending the money, like custodying the money and giving you the money. So I won't describe that. But in Citra, we describe this program as Clementine. We recently open sourced it with like code and the design as well. So what is happening is, yeah, you are going to a web page and inputting your EVM address, and it says, okay, deposit your money to this UTXO. So you send your BTC into that UTXO. After collecting enough signatures, operator simply spends that UTXO and puts it into somewhere, some UTXO that is controlled by the BitVM output. And by showing this transaction proof on Citra, you mint your CBTC. It is exact BTC, but we named it CBTC, so don't make the distinction. And you use the Citra all the time, like you do DeFi, you do lending, you do borrowing, you need stablecoins, and you wanted to go back to the main chain. So there are several options that you can do. One, you can do atomic swap. You can find someone who wants to get in, and without trusting to that person, you can simply go in and go out. So this is the easiest way to get in and get out from the Citra. And the other is using the native Bitvm bridge. And in that, you simply burn your CBTC on the L2 and request a withdrawal from the L1. And once the proof containing this transaction is finalized on Bitcoin, operator gives you money from his pocket and you are good to go. And after 6 months, operator goes to the Bitvm program and shows a ZK proof saying that this was like canonical Citra chain. I did all the withdrawals. These are the proofs for withdrawals. And I want my, let's say, 10 BTC back because I did 10 BTC of withdrawals. And it claims the money back. So in the optimistic scenario, you are not waiting. You are only waiting for proof, let's say 1 hour or 2 hours to generate. And you get your money. But in the pessimistic case, if the operator is malicious, you wait 6 months and the operator getting slashed and kicked out of the committee, and you get your money from other verifiers. So as it is like has a huge like issue of the, like slashing and stuff, it won't ever happen because it is not incentivized to do such thing, and it cannot even steal. It can just like prevent, but it still gets slashed. So you can assume that withdrawals will happen once the proof is finalized, or you can simply use atomic swaps all the time without getting censored.
You mentioned the number in there, which is 6 months in the pessimistic scenario. Why is that time period so long? That seems like abnormally long in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, so in Ethereum, you have this chess clock, what we call is like, as an operator, like you are the verifier and you challenge me and I respond immediately and you respond immediately. So we can immediately go through these steps. But on Bitcoin, there is no relative time. So we had to pre-sign everything with 1 week in the steps. So if this round in the worst case takes 40 transactions, then you need to wait 40 times 7 days because there is no relative time. So in the worst case, if this happens, we need to protect the peg against it. So the 6 months should be longer than the actual worst case fraud proof. That's why we choose 6 months.
I wanted to dive into sort of like the primary design trade-offs, because there are a lot of like design decisions that one can take when designing a Bitcoin L2, or just like any L2, to be honest, on any sort of base there. So could you explain the primary design trade-offs that teams are making in the Bitcoin L2 space today?
Yeah. So you can go with sidechain, right? Like it is the most common way to build. Building a sidechain is not that hard. You simply fork Ethereum or like any Ethereum client or like almost anything that you can do, you can fork. But the issue is how to bridge the BTC, because the Bitcoin doesn't know about anything about sidechain. So you usually put some multisig. It is like the one option is it is like permissions and federation, like closed multisig. You'd select 5 people and say that trust these 5 people, they won't steal your money and you can build the bridge. Another is if you have any other token, native token, then you can make it stake, like stacks, so that the staker of that token becomes the multisig members. That is the one way. So inside chain, you have these 2 ways for the peg, and it is very straightforward other than the peg mechanism. And on the other side, you can build channels like Lightning or like Mercury, which are very limited in terms of programmability and the like capacity and the design. And the other is you can build rollups. I don't think any like legit teams other than Citra building an actual Bitcoin rollup. They usually do the like easiest thing, build a multisig verifier committee and build a rollup on it. So it is kind of rollup with multisig bridge, which are not very useful because the value itself is actually the BTC bridge. So, and the other is what we are doing the hardest way and like the most challenging way to do it, to build the actual ZK verifier in Bitvm.
Can you also dive into Citra VM? I believe it's EVM equivalent, so I'm curious about the design choice there. I assume just given the like you know the sheer amount of developer mindshare on Solidity and the EVM in general would be the answer, but would love to get your thoughts there, as well as I guess your thoughts on interoperability with Citria and maybe Ethereum L2s or other Bitcoin L2s, or how you're thinking about that problem.
Yeah. So we choose EVM because, like you said, we think that it is like for the adoption, it is like the best by far. And it is the like most secure, even though like it has some known drawbacks, but it secures billions of dollars, which other ecosystems probably don't, other than Sola. So we choose the EVM because of like it has proven security and track record and the developer ecosystem. We are building a type 2 ZK EVM, which is like fully EVM compatible. You can simply port your all applications from Ethereum, Arbitrum, Optimism, ZK Sync is not equivalent, so you need to do something, but Ethereum you can easily port. We did this choice, but our like node software is very modular. So in the future, we want to add Wasm VM to enable lower cost computation with like much more data, like much more resource. And you can also implement CVM, like Move VM because of the node software. But the priority is implement the EVM and make it work fully correctly. Other than that, I think other Bitcoin L2s with interoperability, if they're an actual Bitcoin L2, then you can connect this through Lightning. Simply like you can open Lightning channels between the rollups maybe. And if they share the same DA layer, which is Bitcoin in our case, they can also communicate through the DA layer. This is like interesting design, but I don't think any other rollup working on pure Bitcoin DA, so it won't be possible. And for other ecosystems, our node software will include IBC integration. Our node software is like a fork of Sovereign SDK. In the future, it won't be. We will adopt changes to the Sovereign SDK as well. But as of now, it is kind of like similar to the Sovereign SDK. And with the IBC connection coming to their node software, then we will be connected to the Cosmos ecosystem as well.
Following up on that, on Citra VM, which is fully EVM equivalent, just walking through for the listeners, like what is possible? So is it all of the dApps that you see on Ethereum mainnet and its L2s, you know, the DEXs, the money markets, those are all entirely possible within the Citra VM. And the follow-up question is, if you wanted to like mint new tokens on like this Bitcoin L2, like what does that look like? Is it more or less exactly the same as like one would do on like Ethereum or an Ethereum-based L2?
It is exactly the same. Like you simply change the RPC endpoint of your tooling or add some network to MetaMask. It works exactly. If you are minting a ERC20, you do exact same things that you do on Ethereum.
Gotcha. Then following up there, since you mentioned RPC, in terms of infrastructure, more so in terms of like wallet providers, the RPC providers, people like indexing the chain for like data analytics, are there any like interesting nuances to Citra VM versus like, for example, like existing companies, would they need to tailor their infrastructure somehow to sort of make it work with Citra VM? Or would it just work like out of the box?
I think very small tricks are required for like explorers. It is just EVM. Like we support most of the RPC endpoints they need. So they can, but if also they want to like track the L1 finality, which I think none of the terminal to explorers does right now, the exact finality, not the confirmation. I think they need to like do some small arrangements, obviously, other than Ethereum. But the biggest part of it is just changing the RPC URL. It is very easy.
I want to dive in a little bit into the block production process, because on Ethereum L2s, you have centralized sequencers today, and it's a big pain point. We're trying to decentralize, though, to get closer to that, you know, Vitalik touted type 1 status for a rollup. Are you going to see the same problems for Citria, and how are you thinking about working through those?
Yeah, so we have a single sequencer at the beginning, just like any other rollup. I think it is okay to like have until we have a like consistent technology and like secure, everything is secured and audited and such. But our plans is like very straightforward. We will implement proof of stake like mechanism for sequencers. So there will be multiple sequencers, decentralized sequencer network, and they will produce blocks either with like Tendermint consensus or like round robin fashion. And users can just like put a node and connect to that sequencer network. And with that, we will also enable this volition model, which is simply like off-chain DA and on-chain DA combined. So in a single EVM runtime, you have the both options. If you are deploying a contract, you can choose to deploy to the Citria data, and you can choose to deploy to the Bitcoin data. One is the perfectly secure Bitcoin and a little bit expensive. And the other is Citra, extremely cheap. And if you are running a full node, that is also trustless to you. So with this decentralized sequencer network, we will also enable not only like decentralize the sequencer, but enable the boost of the scalability.
Following up the sequencer conversation, you know, most Ethereum-based rollups have soft confirmations from the sequencer. So would a sequencer for Citra also offer like the same soft confirmation, quote unquote, like guarantees for users? And how fast can users expect those soft confirmations?
Yeah. So our current block production is like 2 seconds. The block interval is 2 seconds. And it is, yeah, soft confirmations until the batch is inscribed into Bitcoin. So let's say if the block goes in 10 minutes, then the order guarantee by the sequencer is for the 10 minutes.
Okay. That makes sense. And then I wanted to follow up, ask something about finalization. I think when people think about L2 finalization, there's like a few different ways of thinking about it. One is, for example, like the base chain finalizing after, for example, the transaction call data and the state roots has been posted to the base there. Another way of thinking about it is finalization from like the bridge contract point of view. And that only takes place, for example, after a 7-day fraud challenge window. How would you sort of like explain and think about finalization for a Citra? And I guess, what does that look like from like different stakeholders' perspectives?
Yeah, so we are using state diffs, which means that we are only like inscribing the data after the proof is generated. And there can be like longer waiting times until the proof generated is, let's say, 1 hour or 2 hours. So in order to like keep the order guarantees same, we are inscribing a sequence of commitments to the Bitcoin in every single block, which means that sequencer like inscribes a commitment and says that the ordering is the hash, like ordering hash is this. So in our ZK circuit, in our prover, we are checking against the sequencer commitments so that the ordering isn't changed until the batch is proven. So if you are like regular user doing some regular transactions, you can trust the sequencer commitment if you want. You keep the ordering and ordering won't change and the proof will come after that. If you are fine with that, you can just close your computer. And other than that, if you have like Bitcoin full node, then you can see the data inscribed. And after that, it is just like your threshold, because if you have a Bitcoin node, you owe, like yourself has some threshold for finding it, right? Some people wait 1 Bitcoin block, some people wait 6 Bitcoin blocks. I think it depends on like value of the user transaction that it actually cares. But the regular thing in Bitcoin, like exchanges and stuff, wait for 1 block or 2 block. And the usual indexers and such, like 4 blocks or 5 blocks. 6 blocks is like almost a hard confirmation. It is probabilistic, not hard confirmation. But I think 4 blocks is like very standard if you are doing some like big amount of transfers, let's say.
Following up on the sequencer conversation, I think one thing that's really changed with L2s on Ethereum recently was EIP-4844 through the Denken upgrade. And you saw a lot of changes in sort of like the fee dynamics, especially in terms of the DA posting costs. For Citra and a sequencer, how do you think about, or what do you think like gross margins for the sequencer looks like? And what might be some of like the levers that can change the profitability of the sequencer?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Bitcoin DA is like obviously expensive than like proto-like sharding and like other alt DA layers. So I think the sequencer margin is a little bit higher because of that, because the DA cost is already like higher than that. So Ethereum has this like roll-up centric roadmap, but Bitcoin has this like nothing centric roadmap. It is just like works and like adapt some changes if it makes better in like every, let's say, 2 years or 3 years. So in the short term, Bitcoin DA is like quite an issue for the like price and stuff, but it's obviously the most secure way to scale the actual L1. And in the future with Devolution, I think this issue is also solved for regular and like everyday users, because they have now options with like cheap DA with the same security if they have the full node.
How do Bitcoin reorgs at the base layer affect the user experience on Citra? Like if you are, you know, transacting and then something gets posted or inscribed to Bitcoin, and then it comes out after the fact that actually that block was reorged, like, does that affect the user's balance on the L2, or what does that actually look like in practice?
So we are like sending this proofs after generating the proofs to Bitcoin, and if like it reworks, we send it again. So the L2 never reworks because we are building the L2 blocks on top of the confirmed L1 blocks. So there's no risk, but there's this delay to access to the Bitcoin data. We are waiting 4 blocks to access to the Bitcoin data, but as a result, L2 never rollbacks to the L1 if there's like some not deep reorg. But after the proof is inscribed, like I said, it is user's preference to choose whatever like time they want to wait. They can wait 1 block and close their computer. They can wait 4 blocks. They can wait 6 blocks. It depends on the I think user's choice. But there is no rollback on the L2 because of that.
And then zooming out, like, why do you think there's demand to use a Bitcoin L2 over an Ethereum L2? Like it feels like we're kind of, you know, taking a step backwards in a way in terms of, you know, 10-minute block times, long withdrawal times, you know, long time to finality. Like, why is this ultimately something that you decided this is something I need to devote all my time to?
Yeah. So I think there are several other things that we need to discuss here. One is, like, Bitcoin is the, like, most valuable asset in the blockchain right now. It is more than 1 trillion and it is untapped. And with Ordinals and like BRC20s and other things, we saw that there is actually a demand for using Bitcoin. It is not doing like shitcoin stuff or it is not doing NFT stuff. It is actually about we want to transact using Bitcoin. We want to use Bitcoin in the economy. We want to pay with Bitcoin. So we saw the demand with Ordinals and BRC20s. That's the main reason that we are building it, because there's demand from the users actually use Bitcoin. They do BRC20 is because there is no option to build Uniswap on Bitcoin natively. That's why we are building etc. Another is everyone in the like crypto has BTC in their portfolio. And I think that's for sure. Like maybe like less than 1% of the people don't have any BTC in their portfolio, but usually this BTC sits in the ledger, Trezor, like cold wallet or like Bitcoin main chain. I personally don't trust WBTC. Some people don't trust Ethereum. Some people don't trust other things. So the issue is like, but these people want to use Bitcoin, want to yield Bitcoin, want to like lend their Bitcoin and borrow USDT instead of selling it. So I think there's some demand from the Bitcoin base here. We saw that with Ordinals and their events, but with Citrate, this will also accelerate because most of the Ethereum people actually don't know how they can use the Bitcoin in the economy because it is not possible to use in a trust minimized way. But with Citrate, you can now use the BTC in a trust minimized way in the real economy.
Following up on that, you mentioned how you don't trust WBTC, which is, I think, a very fair take. I think it's still currently custodied by Bitcoin, even though they've been doing it for a really long time without any sort of incidents. Conversely, if someone wanted to sort of wrap, say, Ethereum or USDC from Ethereum onto Citrate, like a Bitcoin L2, what does that process look like? And maybe what's like the most trust minimized version of like wrapped ETH that you can build on Citrate?
So we are not like natively building an Ethereum bridge, but if there is someone like who wants to build, I can give some advice. On Citrate, we have this single succinct proof for all the states, right? I mentioned the proof that is actually verified in BitVR is a single proof verifies all the Citrate blockchain. So you can actually move this proof from the Bitcoin base here to the Ethereum smart contract and make this gross 16 proof verify that, right? As a step one, then Ethereum actually now verifies Citrate in a trust minimized way. So this is the one side of the bridge. Now Ethereum knows Citrate actually holds the assets. So how Citrate can know Ethereum also holds the assets? So you can also have this Ethereum Lite client proof, which is not trust minimized actually. It's like SIM committee that is happening around the validators, but it works. It's also you can wrap it into like Row 16 proof. The Succinct team did this for like Gnosis chain bridge, I think. So you can also get this proof and verify on Citrate. So now in the both sides, you actually verify the ZK proof. One is very trust minimized and the other is the white client proof. So both chain knows their latest state. Then you can build an almost trust minimized Ethereum bridge to bring the Ethereum liquidity as well. I think this is like a more concrete thing how we can build, but we are not natively building any solution for that.
Okay, That makes sense. And I guess an open invite to anyone that wants to build this bridge. I wanted to go back to the sequencer and sort of like the fee conversation. So for most L2s, there's the your L2 transaction fee is comprised of two components. The first is the L1 data posting cost, and then the second is the L2 execution fee. I guess I'm quite curious about how you guys are going to calculate the L2 execution fee. Are you going to add an extra, so for example, like factor? Will you like dynamically, is it going to be like EIP-1559 style? How are you guys thinking about this execution fee?
Yeah, there will be like the EIP implemented, but be the like a data fee plus a base fee for the proving cost. And the extra tip will be if goes to like sequencer. So, but in the future, yeah, we need to like arrange a fee market according to the like actual proof generation, because proof generation gas is like proof generation cost is not exactly the same with the EVM cost, the EVM gas cost, but that requires three-dimensional fees, which no wallet supports today, right? Even with MetaMask, we are transacting with Arbitrum and Optimism, it adds some DA costs, but the wallet actually doesn't like support it. I think that's a like quite big problem. But before going to the like with three phase fee market with the proving cost, the tip and the DA cost, we first need to solve the compatibility issues with all the wallets. But after that, yeah, we will implement this multi-fee market.
How large in terms of data are these proofs going to be? Because I see like a lot of people talking about Celestia and Solana and obviously proto-dank sharding and like DA throughput. So how much can Bitcoin actually handle from like a, like, because you'd imagine like if you start throwing in fixed interval inscriptions and then there's multiple L2s, like this could get, you know, into a bidding war pretty quickly, especially if there's user demand. So what does the capacity actually look like?
Yeah, so Bitcoin has this 4 megabytes per 10 minutes. You can use it with anything you want, either like regular payment transaction or inscription. So we are using state diffs and like we are batching as many transactions as possible. And so with state diffs, you cannot say like exact TPS or exact thing because it depends on the usage. But we sample several Ethereum blocks, and if we do like 10 times more TPS than Bitcoin, we only take like quarter of the Bitcoin block, and we still like leave space for the other transactions as well. So I think in the short term, it is enough to scale Bitcoin because of the like newly bootstrapping demands and like new use cases. But in the long term, yeah, we need alternative DA to solve this. In our team, it is Volition, which is like the native DA combined with Bitcoin DA. But others can choose to like build Validiums, use Celestia DA, MLDA, Optimiums, or maybe even self-custody DA solutions with like payment-focused roll-ups. But in our case, Volition is the solution for the long-term DA problem.
I guess you mentioned like the possibility of using alternative DA bridges just now. For Bitcoin rollups, would the implementation of that be exactly the same as sort of like Ethereum-based rollup? Would you also require, for example, like a Blobstream, I forget the exact name, but like the Gravity bridge from like Celestia to Bitcoin? Would someone need to build that in order for Celestia, for example, to be used as an LDA layer for a Bitcoin rollup?
Yeah, if someone wants to build like Bitcoin L2, Bitcoin Validium or Optimium with Celestia DA, they need to get like our Clementine bridge and they need to replace this light client proof combined with the like Blobstream proof or like vector proof of the avail so that they can also get the guarantee of the like other chains data available to commit to that bridge's actual data attestation. It is like not easy thing to do. It needs like aggregation on gross 16 proofs and such, but yeah, it is doable, but it is not in our roadmap.
Gotcha. Nah, that makes sense. I wanted to dive into proof generation a little, given that's a pretty core component of Citra. So there's a few components and moving parts that I would like to dive into. The first one are the batch proofs that are produced for every Bitcoin block. Could you dive into exactly what's happening here and perhaps how the batch proof circuit is configured to scan batch proof inscriptions via inclusion and soundness proof? Sorry, that was a super long question.
No, I think it's a fair question. So like I said, we inscribe the sequencer commitments on the Bitcoin like per 10 minutes. This helps us to like keep the ordering the same. But But while doing the proof generation of ZK EVM, we also need to consider these sequencer commitments, right? But you can simply input the sequencer commitments. But if you cannot, like, you cannot constrain them so that a prover can lie about sequencer commitments and change the order. In order to prevent this, our circuits fit, like, the, this is a feature coming from the sovereign code base as well. We have this inclusion and solvers proofs. So you have the block header, you have the blobs extracted from the block according to some rule, and you have the inclusion and completeness proof against it. So inclusion proofs simply check that this commitment is actually included in the block. It is simple by just checking the Merkle proofs against the block header. And the second is the soundness proof, the completion proof. So with that, we are also checking that there is no other commitments other than these provided ones. So it is a little bit trickier to implement, but it simply looks to the Bitcoin header and like several transaction hashes and says, okay, this is the only possible block that can be included in this block. And with that, we can, in the ZK circuit, we can make sure that these sequencer commitments are trustless. They are not coming from a trusted source like prover. And then we are proving the ZK EVM batches and periodically check against the sequencer commitments so that the ordering didn't even change.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. There's another type of proofs, which are like client proofs. And these recursively validate the batch proofs and provides a single proof for the full rollup history, right? And this allows for things like trustless and instant like clients. Could you walk us through this process for like client proofs and perhaps some of the trust assumptions that this enables for like clients?
Yeah, so with this batch proofs, we are inscribing these batch proofs on Bitcoin, right? But later, then we go over the Bitcoin block space and aggregate these proofs together. So we simply extract the proof from Bitcoin with inclusion and solvers proofs again, and then recursively verify these proofs together. So in the end, you have a single proof saying that I scanned all the Bitcoin blocks until this block hash, and I verified every single Citrea block that I encountered. So in the end, if you verify this right-client proof, and if you know the latest Bitcoin block hash with your like Bitcoin light node or like Bitcoin full node, then you can make sure that this is the canonical Citrea blockchain. This proof helps us with like building the Ethereum bridge that I mentioned. You can move this proof to the Ethereum and verify that. And also in BitVM, we are verifying author proof, also verify this proof as well. So it's a very powerful concept similar to Mina that has like single succinct proof for all the blockchain.
There's also one more exciting sort of newer concept that I don't think I've ever seen before. And this is part of Citrus proof generation and it's block space proving. Would you mind sort of just giving a quick rundown of what block space proving is and why is it needed?
It is the name of this inclusion and solvers proofs. So you're actually proving the block space that you extracted the proofs of commitments from the block space. You are proving that with inclusion and solvers proofs. So it is the broader name of the concept that I described. Yeah.
Okay, got it. And then so one other aspect of the Clementine blog post that we'll actually link to the show notes for the listeners to read themselves. But one of the questions that I had was the static UTXO sizes, and it sounds like it needs to be a fixed amount of Bitcoin when pegging in and pegging out. Can you explain why that's the case? And you probably already touched on it earlier, but definitely like a lot to grasp in such a short amount of time.
Yeah, for sure. It's lots of things to like talk. It is not even like we haven't talked even most of the things. But yeah, with Clementine and the BitVM usually, there is no smart contracts that all the funds are collected, right? We are simply having this deposit UTXOs, which are separate UTXOs, but they are controlled by the BitVM UTXO through some outputs and stuff. But if you do dynamic UTXO size, someone can deposit 1, someone can deposit 10, someone can deposit 5. So once the withdrawal needed, and let's say it is needed for 3 BTC, you cannot even withdraw because there is no 3 BTC UTXO. You need to use the 5 BTC UTXO. But after that, as you don't have covenants, you cannot make sure that the rest of the UTXO, the 2 BTC, even come back to the Bitcoin bridge. So that's the issue of BitVM and not having covenants. So we are having this fixed size UTXO for pegging and pegouts.
And is the idea that that will be able to be changed / upgraded in the future as Bitcoin kind of evolves as a DA layer?
Yeah, I think if Bitcoin adopts some changes like recurrent governance or maybe even in the future the ZKP verifier opcode, then yeah, why not?
Got it. And then I did want to touch on MEV because I did diagnose some like interesting MEV over on the Stacks landscape. And I'm wondering if you think there's a world, because I've started seeing, I think it was Marathon is working on an L2. They're a large miner. Maybe they're incentivized to not pick up Citria transactions and instead only include their own. Is that like a worse doomsday scenario that you've thought about?
I don't think this kind of exclusivity will ever happen. There's like only Pool, which is Ocean, that excludes, like explicitly excludes the ownerless transaction. And it caused lots of like confusion and like issue in the community. So Bitcoin miners are like economically, they rationally simply mine blocks with lots of fees. The most fee block wins. That's in their like goal because they need to maximize their fees to like cover the hash rate cost, the machine costs, and electricity costs as such. So if you pay enough fees, I think Bitcoin doesn't even censor you because like it has a proven record on censorship resistance. It is like way, way better than Ethereum, which are like most blocks are like OFAC compliant as such. But in Bitcoin, there's like only one issue happened in the last couple of years that is like OFAC sanctioned addresses are actually excluded. So I don't think this kind of MEV will ever happen. And we are using like single sequencer mechanism. So also the MEV and like sandwich kind of thing is not possible because we authorize the transactions with that signature. But in the future, let's see if we see based rollups on Bitcoin and some other interesting constructions. I think it can enable harmful MEV on Bitcoin, but it already happens with BRC20 tradings because there's like some buying event and you can maybe dump the price even. You cannot because it's not the AMM, but there's some other ways to like front run or like back run some transactions on Bitcoin.
You mentioned earlier, I'm really curious as to why you chose a ZK architecture over a optimistic architecture for such a, and I'm sure it ties into some of like the proof generation factors that you mentioned just now, but would love to just hear why ZK over optimistic.
Yeah, so mainly because like the data issues. Like I said, Bitcoin DA is quite limited. And if you are using with optimistic rollup scenario, then you need to post the full transactional data to the L1. You cannot use state diffs because there is no state diffs. You need to get all the transactional data to create the fraud proofs. We are mainly using ZK for compression. It compresses lots of data together, so the scalability improvement is way better than the optimistic rollups. And in Bitcoin community, in the future, we are expecting to have like this ZKP verifier opcode in the base layer in the like next, let's say, 5 years. So if it ever happens, then having a ZK rollup will be too easy to switch just using that opcode. But there won't be an ever like fraud-proof opcode, maybe.
So as you decentralize, like I can imagine the need for a slashable token. How do you think about that? Do you think it makes sense to have like Bitcoin as that slashable asset, or I guess in your case, CBTC? Or do you think it makes more sense to like have like an external token? But then of course you run into the risk of attacks with like, you know, derivatives and stuff like that.
I think if you can do something with Bitcoin, you need to do this with Bitcoin. So with this like sequencer staking and stuff, we are looking ways to like do this with BitVM and Bitcoin staking, maybe using like Babylon, similar protocol to like Babylon to have the staking. So if you like technologically can make it with Bitcoin, I think it is always better to make it with Bitcoin.
I wanted to ask a question about bottlenecks. So for Ethereum in the early days, you saw a pretty high amount of bottleneck from the DA, sort of DA throughput or amount of like data publishing capacity available. Now with EIP-4844, you're seeing some bottlenecks with execution and specifically sort of like the VM execution environment. What do you think is the main bottleneck for Bitcoin L2s today, and how do you see that sort of evolving?
I think for the like rollups, the main issue is obviously the DA throughput again, which we will solve with Volition, and the other is the settlement issue. Yeah, we are using BitVM. The security and like trust assumption is way, way better than the multisigs, but it is still very clunky, right? Yeah, if you had like this OPZKP, then we could immediately verify and settle on every single block and everyone will be happy. So I think there are lots of things to improve. I don't think in the near term there will be like block size increase or such. In the like longer future, I do think there will be block size increases. But maybe like non-consensus blob space for like small, this kind of follow-ups, similar to protodoc sharding, can be implemented on Bitcoin. And with like ordinals and stuff, I do see like some community members also think about this kind of solution. But it is also not in the near future again. So our way is to like solve these problems on our own with volition model. But the settlement, yeah, Bitfame is the best thing that we have so far. And until we have the CKP verifying, I think settlement will always be at some issue and like the trust, not trustless, but trust minimized issue around the settlement. Yeah.
That's actually all the questions that I had, you know, kind of prepped, Ren. So I don't know if you have any others, but Orkun, I would also love to just give you the chance because you know this stuff way better than I do. Is there anything that we missed on in this conversation that you think is worth chatting about for a bit?
I think from a technology perspective, we covered lots of things. And from the other perspective, like the economy and stuff, we believe that Bitcoin is the real currency. But without having a real economy around it, it's not actually a currency. It's just like payment tool, payment token, let's say. So with Ctrade, what we want to enable is an economy around Bitcoin. There is this BlockFi issue happened. But if we had like non-custodial Bitcoin lending, it won't ever happen. Because the reason why we are building Ctrade is simply this. We want to enable a Bitcoin finance, Bitcoin economy, to make the Bitcoin as like the foundation for the world's finance and make BTC as like the king of the asset. It is already like the biggest asset, but the only use case today is payments, but there can be more. So what Ctrade provides to all the developers is just port their applications from Ethereum, as well as building some unique applications to empower the Bitcoin finance.
Yeah, completely agree with that. I mean, Bitcoin is the largest crypto asset. I know people don't like that word, but crypto token by a large margin. And it seems like with like Ordinals NFTs, it's become like evidently clear that people want something to do with that asset and some productive use case. And I think Bitcoin NFTs are a fantastic way to sort of prove out that thesis. Just one last thing, where can the listeners find out more about Ctrade and learn more about what you're working on?
Yeah, sure. Ctrade.xyz is our like webpage, and on Twitter it is Ctrade_xyz. So you can find like all the documentation link, blog link, and like Discord link there. And if you have any question, we have like developer channel on Discord and like general chat, so they can drop, and I usually answer some of them on like our AMA sessions and such. Yeah, that's the all resource, and I'm sure you will put some links below, so it will be easy for people to navigate.
I do have one more question before you go. Are there any other projects building in this space that are taking an innovative approach that, you know, maybe you're not an expert on, but you'd maybe highlight people to look into? And then also, what is the timeline looking like for Ctrade? Like, when will there be if there isn't already a testnet or mainnet, like, what are you targeting?
Yeah, so for testnet, we are targeting in 2 months. So in early May, we want to have this testnet. And let's say, it's like in Q2 broadly. The mainnet will become after like testnets and like all this and such. For other projects, I like BitVM obviously is a like huge stepping stone. And if you know like Rust and like a little bit Bitcoin script, you should contribute to BitVM. And other than that, the same team building ZeroSync and like ZK coins, BitVM, they're all same team and they're all open source as well. I think these are like worth looking. And yeah, Babylon is kind of like innovative on Bitcoin staking and like checkpointing more than that. I don't like quite think Bitcoin staking is like maybe something that is like desirable, but the Bitcoin checkpointing and like proof of work fallback is kind of interesting to me.
Awesome. Well, this has been an awesome episode, Orkun. We'll be sure to link to your Twitter as well. You always post some good stuff on there. And we'll have to bring you on again come, you know, mainnet launch. So we're looking forward to following along.
Yeah, for sure. Like, thank you for this great technical questions as well. It was my pleasure to be here.
Awesome. We'll catch you next time.
We have teamed up with the Wormhole Foundation, stewards of the Wormhole Protocol, the leading interoperability platform powering cross-chain transfers for over 200+ multi-chain dApps. Wormhole isn't just a bridge. It's the leading interoperability platform for multi-chain applications. So go and claim your unique Wormhole NFTs just for 0x Research listeners today. Hit the link in the description to fill out a form and to prove that you've listened to today's episode and receive a PoApp, you get an email over the coming weeks to claim your limited edition NFT.